Books of the Bible. The book of Micah contains prophecies against the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. Micah warns of God's judgment for idolatry and oppressing the poor, but he offers hope of salvation in the coming Messiah, who is a shepherd, a judge, and a ruler. Those whom God has saved are charged to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with their God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And now another breaking rapper story from our very own in-house rapper critic fellow, Jimmy the Handsome Hicks. This is Wretched Radio. You found out about the Humble Beast?
I did, yes. They're an actual record label.
There's a number of artists there. It's not like, I don't even know if there's like a Humble Beast rapper fellow, but it's a label. This goes back, yikes, about 20 years ago. I think they even had a rap song about law and grace, the law gospel distinction. They were quoting the Puritans. They were on fire about 20 years ago, but they're still going. I can't vouch for them today. Hopefully they've towed the orthodox line, but the Humble Beast still doing the Christian rap.
It appears so. Cool. It appears so. But can you really be humble if you call yourself humble? Is that being humble?
Yes. It can be.
Okay.
You're not going to like this answer. Jesus called himself humble.
Well, yeah, that's true. He preached
on this, I think, a week or two ago. And I think it was Warren Wiersbe who pointed this out. Jesus said, come unto me, Matthew 11, about 28. Come unto me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden. I will give you rest. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. For I am meek, I've got power under control, and I'm humble at heart, and nobody has tagged him on it. No, I have never read anybody or seen anybody make a YouTube video that goes, yeah, Jesus called himself humble, right? Using sarcasm, by the way. Never, because he was. He was the Messiah. He was the conquering king who came in on a donkey, meek and lowly. The world has never tagged Jesus on a claim that normally, you were right, Jimmy. You should, Jimmy, I'm really humble. No, Rick, seriously, I'm super, super humble. You'd go, if you got to tell me you're humble, you're not. But in Jesus' instance, it was not a brag. It was truth. It was reality. And speaking of sarcasm and Jesus, for the fellow who's utilizing a lot of sarcasm in the church service, I said that you should talk to that individual about it, because if they're using it as a serrated edge to rip and shred, or that's too much of it, you should talk to them lovingly. But having said that, sarcasm does have a place, even in the pulpit. And this is backed up biblically. It's not just Paul who was sarcastic. And he was. Go read 2 Corinthians. Woo! Woo! It is like, and somebody might say, well, sarcasm has no place in an epistle by an apostle. Well, he used it. So it does have a use. It just needs to be done thoughtfully. It does need to be done carefully. So if that person is out of balance, using it poorly, it's hurtful, or it just distracts from the service, and it's not used for a purpose, then it should stop. But that doesn't mean that sarcasm is disqualified, because Jesus himself used it. I want you to imagine how sarcastic this was. So often when it comes to Semitic humor, we don't like, but there were times Jesus used humor and he used sarcasm also. And you might not find it a knee slapper, but it was in the context. The religious leaders, they were proud to tell you how knowledgeable they were in the scriptures. They were the law people. We're going to tell you about the laws of Moses. The scribes, the theological lawyers, they were the experts. And Jesus said, haven't you read? That's sarcasm. That's pretty biting sarcasm to boot. Haven't you read? Which one of these miracles are you mad at me for? Which one of these good deeds have I done? Tell me, because I'm a little confused about which good deed is getting me into hot water here. It wasn't said maybe with the same sarcastic tone that we use here. but he used it. And so we have permission. It just needs to be done wisely and well. Jimmy, I think that group that did those videos, I can't even remember what they were called, the name of this group. I think they went out of business. They were making YouTube videos. Do you remember this was the group that did the video on sarcasm? Like the first time sarcasm was used, somebody had to be the first one, causing a great deal of confusion for people.
Yes, I remember that.
That was hysterical.
Yeah.
I don't know if all of their stuff was as clean and as witty, but wow, that was a brilliant bit. They're gone. Bummer. But Humble Beast isn't. 877-282-2337.
All right. This is from Caleb. Todd, my dad recently said that he thought pastors should talk about the news and politics from the pulpit. Is that biblical?
Depends. It can be, certainly. In fact, there are times that it should be. There are some times that just demand, I think, that a pastor consider veering away from an expository approach. First of all, I think that you maybe can feel a little better about that. I think you can hold a tension of being an expositor, but not so committed to it as if it is the only way to possibly preach. And if you step outside of your exposition, it's like a compromise or it's a lesser sermon. If you read a lot of sermons, I was just looking through the Westminster Pulpit. G. Campbell Morgan. It was not expository. Now, his preaching was expository, but it wasn't line after line. It wasn't verse after verse. He just preached on what he thought his people needed to hear, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it was Martin Luther who said that there are times when a preacher who doesn't hit the issues of the day right between the eyes, he's negligent in duty. So, for instance, when the COVID stuff was going on and people losing their jobs and we were so consumed by it, weren't we? The conversations about it, you had the jab issue, just the distancing and all of those things. For a pastor to not preach on that, I think it's a mistake, I think. Now, you could say, well, in 2 weeks, my text actually lends to that, and I'm going to get to that. And I appreciate the line. I really do appreciate this, because even as we're making our way through the Gospel of Matthew, there have been several passages that I wouldn't have picked, because I would have thought, well, of all the things, that one's not all that important, considering the needs of our body, where we're at in the life of this church. But God has it next, so that's what we're preaching. I think that that is a great principle to hold on to, but I don't think it should be inviolatable. Inviolable? You can break it, is what I'm saying, because of the need of the day. Now, should a pulpit become a news source and a commentary on all the stories? I don't think so. I think it needs to be big, and it should be congregational consuming. It needs to be that. Otherwise, you're probably just going to be participating. Get a podcast. Do that there. Make a YouTube video. But preach the word. Address the issues as you see fit. And I think I would also just finally encourage, there are some times when you really ought to do that. We got an election coming up. And you can talk about the Johnson Amendment, but we're looking, this is, anybody not thinking about it? Anybody? Totally. Wait, an election? I had no idea what was going on. Do I think that you should get into a lot of the details and some of the conservative concerns? No. What should you talk about then? Well, the moral issues, the biblical issues. Look, we're looking at a different vote. This is, I can't recall any other election where the lesser of two evils principle weren't more front and center, because we're looking at two candidates that are not fully pro-life. Now, I don't know for sure on some of the other issues that are of concern to us, but I'm going to be watching that debate like a hawk, not because I'm looking for the zingers, but because I want to hear where they are at on biblical issues. And so, Pastor, you can, with the Johnson Amendment, you can sort that. You'll do that the way that you deem best. But that's something we're all interested in. So what would cause a pastor to comment on it, that it rises to the level of, I think that it is needed from the pulpit for the sake of the church to hear about this. You know, don't get into the some of the stuff that's so sensational these days on the internet. Does a pastor need to talk about the Trump trials? Well, I guess if you deem it, but I don't see it particularly, make sure that it qualifies and then do it. And don't sound like a politician. Preach it like a Christian. Don't preach it like, hey, you know what? He sounds an awful lot like the Daily Wire to me. When you're sounding like the Daily Wire from the pulpit, you probably need to do some tweaking and adjusting. And just read this recently, too. This is a reminder that so many sermons. Oh, I know where I read it.
On the Daily Wire.
I had written it.
Oh.
I was looking through something that I had written, and so I'm just quoting myself. There was this guy who wrote that if your sermon could be preached by a Jewish rabbi, that ain't a Christian sermon. Pep talk, moralism, most likely legalism. But if Tony Robbins could jump into your pulpit and say what you're going to say, or Ben Shapiro for that matter, or anybody from the Daily Wire, probably missing the mark. This is Wretched Radio.
Attention all Christians who refuse to be silenced. Are you tired of seeing culture crumble before your eyes? Picture this. Later this year, 8 brilliant minds, each a powerhouse in their field, will be coming on board and joining forces with us here at Gospel Partners Media, and we're creating a Christian version of the Daily Wire. We'll be tackling tough topics by writing articles, creating resources and homeschool curriculums, video resources, podcasts, and a lot more. These gentlemen will be your guides in navigating this upside down, brave new world we're living in. But we need your help to make this vision a reality. If you'll join our $250,000 match campaign right now, you can be part of this exciting new chapter. Every dollar you give will be matched up to $250,000. Just visit wretched.org/fellows right now to learn more about the initiative and each of the 8 brilliant minds that will be joining us. That's wretched.org/fellows.
If you're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry, oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa, poor, poor, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in, they assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years, and it's growing like a nobody's business, and it is a testimony to their faithfulness that over 50% of the Tomorrow Club volunteer leaders were Tomorrow Club kid attendees. Now they, in their villages, are teaching the kids the gospel as volunteers for the Tomorrow Clubs. I got to tell you, that is a testimony. If you love supporting evangelistic ministries that are faithful, that actually preach repentance and faith, it's an outstanding ministry. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
All right, folks, gather around, listen up, because if you're looking to get transformed and save some serious money, and let's be honest, who isn't these days with Bidenflation making everything so ridiculously high? Well, you've stumbled upon the sale of the century at the Wretched Store. We bundled just about everything we could find to save you some money. First up, we've got the Transformed Bundle, seasons 1-3. Originally priced at $134.94, we've slashed that to $49.99. Or how about the Road Trip to Truth Bundle, seasons 1-4, originally priced at $179.92, now just $49.99. And the grand finale of it all, the Wretched Worldview Bundle, seasons 1-2, originally priced at $89.96, now just $29.99. That's right, binge watch all your favorite resources for a fraction of the price. Head over to the Wretched store right now at wretched.org and grab up these bundles before someone else does. And let's face it, missing out would be a real tragedy.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the door. A door serves to provide or prevent access. Thieves and robbers are prevented from entering in, but those who trust in Christ are able to come through him into eternal salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Don't make me turn this program around. This is Wretched Radio. Send stuff. Wow, that was kind of aggressive. Send stuff, please, to idea@wretched.org. I'm agitating myself even as I speak. Don't forget questions, comments, conundrums, or snarks. 877-282-2337.
Oh, thanks for stopping. And this is from Justin. Todd, a ministry that I've supported for years has announced that it will invest in AI, an AI that is supposed to teach others the gospel. Their goal, they say, is to amaze people with this. And they claim that the church will be left behind unless we invest in AI like everyone else is doing. I feel opposed to it because I believe that the Bible is clear about humans discipling other humans. I also kind of worry that this ministry is exhibiting worldly thinking.
I can't comment on the worldly thinking or not, but should we be utilizing things of the world to propagate the gospel? I say, as a rule, yeah, we're doing it right now. Radio, social media, YouTube videos. A lot of people get saved on the internet. A lot of people. So maybe we're so unfamiliar with the AI at this point that we're like, whoa, what is this thing? And that's the right attitude to have, by the way. There are a lot of ethical considerations surrounding AI. Even the current administration, just this week, I believe, released 8 rules that corporations should follow if they're going to use AI. Even the heathens understand this thing could get out of control. So I think we Christians, we can and should be having these conversations to figure out, all right, how can we utilize something that is neither sinful nor necessarily edifying? It goes either way here. How do we utilize it? We've already crossed that bridge with so much technology. There are Christian programs on television. What about the AI? I would say this. If you're concerned about it, that maybe this could get out of control, Then wait and support it maybe as it progresses to see where this ministry is going with it and how they're going to utilize it. I would say this, the argument that we have to do it or we'll be left behind, I don't think that's a powerful ethical argument for it. I think we need to be asking different questions like, will we be compromising in any way? Will this wrongly present the gospel? And then the issue that this fellow brought up is, what about humans discipling humans? Well, if AI replaces that, that's a problem because humans should be discipling humans. And I don't think anybody should be at all confused. If you're watching a lot of social media, you're learning perhaps from somebody, but you're not being discipled. Discipled, that's a mano a mano. That's a face-to-face affair in the context, proverbially, of the local church. So having said all that, let's be asking the ethical questions that surround AI. We should be able to answer them better than anybody else. Let's see if we can utilize it well, because I say, if we can harness that bad boy and we can see people getting saved, because we know that does happen on the YouTube and the social media stuff and the Google machine, people reading articles, then I say, let's do it. Let's just do it biblically. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Joe. Todd, I was just wondering if you had any advice on dealing with grief over apostate friends.
We should have more of it, to be honest. You can kind of forget, whoa, people are perishing. I think it's actually good for us regularly to have our hearts broken about the fate of the ungodly because it motivates us to evangelize and share the good news. So I would never want to minimize that grief or that concern for the lost. I would say we should cultivate it. Now, how do you get over it? Well, the way that you do with any other grieving, time, Bible applied to the situation, and I would never want to expedite somebody's grieving. It would be a very rare day when I would say, hey, that person's grieving too long. I've heard that. Oof. I've even heard with some Christian, not biblical, Christian counseling, you should mourn for this long. If somebody's mourning for this long, then they're sinning. They've got issues. Whoa. Hold the phone, Henrietta. Everybody's built differently. How many different dynamics and scenarios are there? Wouldn't it actually be weird If somebody married for 50 years loses their spouse and it's like, no big whoop, I'm off to Disney. You'd go, whoa, 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 whoa. Let people grieve. Let them have it out. Could it get to the point where you have to say, friend, I think that, you know, we should probably talk about turning a corner here. Yeah, but we need to do it better than say, I don't know, Job's friends. Grieving is something that is human. Our Savior grieved. And guess what he grieved over when he entered Jerusalem? Oh, Jerusalem, how many? I want to save you. That was a heavy-hearted Savior that we see. Remember, he splugnidzomide. His guts were moved. And it was over the lostness of people. And so if you're talking about grieving over a particular individual, go through the process. But as a general principle, I would say to all of us, if we have not been grieving over the eternity of lost people, we're probably out of whack. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Anonymous. Todd, there are so many programs in educational...
What kind of...
I need to go to one of them. Educational institutions that charge money to understand the Bible. Is there anywhere in the Bible that prohibits financial transactions with the charging of money to others who want to better understand the Bible?
Yeah, if you're hoodwinking them. If you're using them... That was the table tipping that we see in the temples with Jesus. It wasn't necessarily that people were there providing. They came, they didn't have the sacrifice. That could actually be a service, but they were there to ka-ching. So any institution that is trying to utilize Christianity for a profit center, eh. But I think institutions, they can do commerce. I think educational institutes, they can charge people. They got bills to pay. And we see this even in the context of the church. The pastor should be compensated. He's working. He should be rewarded. The ox that treads the grain gets to eat some of it. So there's nothing wrong with financial exchanges. The issue is heart and why we are doing them. That's why I know some people aren't comfortable with this. A bookstore inside of a church, no problem. If it's really genuinely there to be a service, rock on. A Christian organization, an institution that charges for it, rock on. Now, having said that, I think every Christian institution, organization, and ministry that has commerce involved with the running of the organization needs to regularly be asking the question about personal motives, because it's very easy to be, hey, what's the budget? Where are we at with this? How much has come in? What are we charging for the... Got to always be watching your hearts. And I do think that you probably need to be watching the profit margins, that if we're charging as much as the pagans are and it could be done for less, then I think we should be a bit of a hallmark in that regard. We should be a little bit different than the world because we want everybody to have this. And so I think that they're okay in doing it. I just think, though, that there needs to be a mindfulness that, wow, when money gets involved in ministry, dangers are everywhere, Will Robinson. 877-282-2337.
All right, from Anonymous, Todd, our adult daughter has self-identified as transgender and self-diagnosed with multiple personalities. My question is, how do we biblically navigate this? We can't agree with her lifestyle, of course, and for the safety of our younger children, we feel like we have to keep her at arm's length.
Yeah.
Any advice?
Yeah, it depends on the age of those kids. You know the situation better, so it's a little dangerous to speak about somebody's particular situation, but I think that there are some principles that need to be applied in different ways that perhaps are helpful. It's your daughter. Love your daughter. Be involved in your daughter's life. That does not mean that you are endorsing their lifestyle. And if you are confused that they're confused about your attitude, then lovingly state, hey, let's just kind of clear the deck here a little bit regarding our relationship. We love you to pieces. That is never going to change. And from this moment on, we are going to be lavishing love on you as our child, just like we would with any of our children, whatever their identification happens to be, because we love you. Just want to make sure you don't confuse that with affirmation of your choices. We good to go? Terrific. Give me a hug, honey. What about the younger kids? I do think you need to have rules to make sure that they aren't being too heavily influenced by an older sibling who is likely to have a negative influence on them. You can have those rules. Simultaneously, it's an opportunity to teach the younger kids, it depends on the age, to talk about it. Teach them, share with them what's going on. Hey, your older brother, your older sister, this is what they're, we know that that isn't biblical. We know that that's a sin. And that means our sibling, they need to get saved. But what they're doing and what you're going to be seeing is bad. So we're not going to emulate it. We're not going to become infatuated because they're an older sibling with influence. We're going to recognize it's a sin, but simultaneously, we're going to love that sinner. Should that individual be a danger to the children? Well, then you would keep your kids safe from them, just like you'd keep them safe from anybody. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.